Take a moment to think about something you've done every week for the past 6 years. Got it? It's probably something you love doing, it's personally meaningful, and likely helps both expand your world and I hope enhance the lives of those in your community. That's what the Catalyst 360 podcast has been for me. 289 consecutive weekly episodes over the past 6+ years. It's incredible to have the opportunity to speak to some of the best and brightest individuals on the planet, and an honor to have you spend a portion of your week with me, so thank you. I hope it's making a difference for you and those in your circle of influence, whether that's employee team members, coaching clients, friends, family members, or others. But sometimes it's important to mix things up a bit, right? I hope you're nodding your head and saying, yeah, it is important sometimes. So that's exactly what we're going to do today. We're going to throw in something a little bit different. Suzanne and I both love to read. We've probably given away close to 1,000 books over the years and still have well over 1,000 books lining the shelves of our home office library. As I sat pondering various options to provide you, our listeners, with a little extra variety, I stared at the shelves in front of me and there was the answer. Let's bring them the very best stuff from the very best books available. The data from Gallup, it's pretty fascinating. It basically says 60% of us read 5 or less books a year, with half of those being fiction. To me, books are an opportunity to tap into the wisdom of some of the world's brightest and most insightful people for a little more than a cup of coffee. That's a pretty good deal, but I also get that time is extremely limited. And if we can provide you with the core elements of a life-shifting book via this podcast, even if you never get a chance to read it, there's some real value there. So let's start with a book whose timing, at least in my mind, I think is incredibly invaluable. We sit here in a world that is more polarized than ever. We've in many ways stopped thinking. We just go with the status quo, what our tribe is saying. And Adam Grant's masterpiece titled Think Again is so timely. What I'm going to do here is I'm going to hit some key takeaways based on our topic here, health, wellness, and our lives as a whole. And then I was trading emails with Dr. Grant, and he provided me some additional insights that came to mind after the book was completed and published and all that. So I'll include some of what he shared with me as well. I also realized in preparing this that it takes a lot more time to prep for this than our traditional interviews when, frankly, the guest is doing all the highlighting. But hey, we said we wanted to mix it up a bit, so let's give it a go, and you tell us what you think. If we haven't yet crossed paths, I'm Dr. Brad Cooper of Catalyst Coaching 360. And as I read this book, I didn't even get out of the prologue before he had me with this quote. We laugh at people who still use Windows 95, yet we still cling to opinions that we formed in 1995. We listen to views that make us feel good instead of ideas that require actual thinking. Wow, does that resonate at all? Or maybe make us squirm a little bit? It did me. I was thinking, wow, 95, that wasn't that long ago. Oh my gosh, that was 28 years ago. And I'm still hanging on. That doesn't make sense. Or maybe it does. But if I revisited that, or if I just adopted it and continued forward because in 95, it made sense. The big concept that stuck with me is that when we think and talk, we generally slip into the mindset of one of three professions. And I love this because it sticks with you so easily. It's three P's. It's preacher, prosecutor, or politician. And think of yourself in this, because as I was reading, I was thinking of myself and people I spent a lot of time with. And we all have a tendency, but we also will switch roles here occasionally. So again, as we're thinking and talking, we generally slip into one of three professions: preacher, prosecutor, or politician. The preacher mode is when our sacred beliefs are in jeopardy. This can be religious oriented, but it may not be. It may be diet oriented or exercise oriented or sleep pattern, or you name it. I mean, in health and wellness, we live in a world with a lot of preachers out there. So this is a very, very, very common one. So when those sacred beliefs are in quotes, are in jeopardy, we deliver sermons to protect and promote our ideals. The prosecutor piece kicks in when we recognize flaws in other people's reasoning. We're looking to prove them wrong and win our case. And then the politician mode is when we're seeking to win over an audience, trying to garner the approval of those around us. But in the process of preaching that we're right, prosecuting others who are in the wrong, at least in our minds, and politicking for support, we forget to think. We're so busy on either preaching, prosecuting, or politicking that we don't think. So Grant then, after he presents that, he goes into an alternative option. And this is the one I want to encourage you to join me on this path. And it's frankly why we started this podcast in the first place 6 years ago. And that alternative option is the scientist. And no, he's not suggesting we need to go back and take chemistry class or memorize the periodic table. He clarifies that being a scientist is a frame of mind. It's a way of thinking that any of us can pursue. It differs from preaching, prosecuting, and politicking. We move into the scientist mode not when we earn some specific degree, but rather when we're openly searching for the truth. And when it comes to health and wellness, we could definitely benefit from that approach, couldn't we? Searching for the truth isn't leaning in on charismatic speakers, conspiracy theories, popular opinion, headlines. We talk a lot about headlines and fads here on the podcast. Rather, scientific thinking favors, and I'm going to say this slowly because it's important, scientific thinking favors humility over pride, doubt over certainty, and curiosity over closure. Let me say that again. These are powerful, powerful phrases. Scientific thinking favors humility over pride, doubt over certainty, and curiosity over closure. Wow. He presents a couple of images, and obviously you can't see those. We're doing this on the podcast versus the YouTube coaching channel, but I'll go through these and I think you'll be able to capture them because they're pretty straightforward. The rethinking cycle that we're encouraged to absorb is very different from the overconfidence cycle, which I will admit I fall into consistently. Susanna can back that up, and maybe you do too. So let me walk you through these two and you can see the differences. So the rethinking cycle starts with humility. Just that alone. If you miss the whole rest of the rethinking cycle and you just think, okay, we start with humility. We don't start with, I've got this, I know this, I'm the smartest person in the room, etc. It's a beginning phase of humility, which then leads to potential doubt. We're opening that door to maybe I don't have this figured out. That then leads to curiosity. Well, if I don't have it figured out, what might be some alternatives? What might the research be leading us toward? And then that leads to discovery. And then the cycle repeats. So we discover that. And that's what a scientist does. A scientist, those of you who this may be a new concept for, you may think science is all about proving the status quo. Science is the opposite. The entire focus of a true scientist is to disprove the previous thought. That is the goal of a research study, is to look for the holes. It's to figure out what is different than what we thought was correct. And that's what this rethinking cycle looks like. Humility leads to doubt or openness to doubt because you're being humble. That then leads to this curiosity and then discovery. And folks, be careful here, because this can be misinterpreted. There are so many resources by non-credible individuals, people who are quite charismatic, that are just spouting opinions, not actual data. And so that's where we've got to be careful, even with this rethinking cycle, because that curiosity, if we run down a rabbit trail of something that has no backing except a charismatic person, then this process doesn't help us. We need to lean in on the data, and that's what a scientist does. So the rethinking cycle, humility leads to doubt that opens the door to curiosity and discovery. And then that repeats. The overconfidence cycle, which again, raising my hand, yes, fall prey to this consistently. It begins with pride. I've got this. Like, I've done my homework. I know this. We talked about Windows 95. It's in there. I've been doing it this way. It's working. So pride leading to conviction. It works so well. It's absolutely correct. I've got this conviction about it. And then that leads to these biases. And we've done plenty of episodes in the past on biases. The two primary ones here are confirmation and desirability biases. We're so convinced because our pride leads to that conviction that we then seek out confirmation bias, desirability bias. That just means we're looking. We don't even have to look. We automatically see those things that support our position, our conviction, and that validates where we were, which just increases the level of pride and conviction. Rinse and repeat. So pride, conviction, confirmation, desirability biases leads to validation, incorrect validation, but validation nonetheless, rinse and repeat. He points out the core starting point for rethinking, humility, is often misunderstood. It's not about having low self-confidence. That's not it at all. Rather, it's from the Latin root meaning from the earth. It's about being grounded, recognizing we are all fallible. We all have room to learn and grow. Being reasonable literally means that we can be reasoned with. That's so simple. Of course it means that. But we miss that. When we say be reasonable, it doesn't mean agree with me. It means let us sit and reason, that there's a discussion to be had, that the preacher, prosecutor, politician options are kept over to the side. When we're in a heated discussion, it can make good sense for us to ask both ourselves and the person we're having the discussion with, what evidence would change your mind? Or what evidence would change my mind? If the answer is nothing, then folks, what are we doing? If literally we ask ourselves that question, forget the other person for a minute. If you're having a conversation or a discussion and they're coming to you with something that's challenging your conviction and you silently ask yourself, what evidence would change my mind? If you answer nothing, then there's no reasoning to be done. At that point, we're talking about beliefs, not evidence. And beliefs are important. Beliefs play a critical role in our lives. Beliefs are core to what I'm doing here on earth. But that's a belief. That's not something that's based on evidence. It's a different category. And if we're talking about beliefs, then we're not having a discussion. So that's a super valuable question. What evidence would change your mind? What evidence would change my mind? If the answer is nothing, then what are we doing? It just doesn't work. I mean, can you imagine what would happen in our world, our workplaces, our neighborhoods, even our families, our marriages, our personal relationships, if we put these elements into practice? As I read this book, I just kept thinking, oh my gosh, like this is what we need. What I want to do next is I'm going to talk through a summary. He's got five primary concepts in his book, along with an action step related to each one. And I'm going to go through those as we kind of tie a ribbon on this thing. I also had an opportunity to interact with Dr. Grant via email as we were setting up this episode. And I'll share some of the additional insights that he provided in that email about some things that he would have changed or added to the book if he were to rewrite it today. So I thought that was pretty fascinating. Before I jump into that, a quick note related to this idea of thinking again, for those that maybe are involved with your employee health and wellness strategy, whether that's your company, whether you're a benefit consultant or you're in a coaching role. Almost 90% of organizations with 100 plus employees have some sort of wellness program in place. But are they actually creating lasting, meaningful change, or are they just a multitude of boxes that need to be checked, including one that says our company has an employee wellness program? If you're looking to use these think again concepts about how you're approaching your organizational well-being strategy, Catalyst Coaching 360, it might be worth a look. Instead of the wellness box checking, call center-based coaching with low engagement, questionable ROI, Catalyst Coaching 360 helps create lasting, meaningful change based on employee goals and needs, not our insights in quotes, about what they need. Interestingly, the timing of this episode corresponds with a brand new service we just released called the 360 Wellbeing Checkup. Think of a dental checkup. What is it? 65% or so of employees see their dentist regularly, and yet there's nothing like that for our mental and physical well-being. And this concept of the 360 well-being checkup changes that. It allows you to tap into that, to provide that service, and really to bring that concept to the forefront. All the details on the website, catalystcoaching360.com, or reach out if you'd like to talk about it, results@catalystcoaching360.com, and we can talk through your specific goals, your situation, that kind of stuff. Let's jump into the five primary summary areas and the action points from Dr. Grant, and then we'll dig into some of what he shared about what he might change with this if he were to rewrite it. So the first one is to embrace intellectual humility. We talked about humility before. The concept here is to recognize I don't have all the answers, and our beliefs could be wrong. Now, if they can't be wrong, then we're not having a conversation again. But if we're really having a discussion, if we're thinking again, then we're open to the possibility of being mistaken or misinformed. And then that leads to practice active listening and consider other viewpoint without immediate judgment. How powerful is that? And folks, I'm talking to myself as much as I'm talking to you, probably more than I'm talking to you. I need to do more of this. It's so interesting when you go into a conversation with the perspective, not of I'm going to show them what I know, I'm going to prove to them I'm right, but rather, what could I learn here? And so his action step for this first one is to engage in conversations where you intentionally seek out differing opinions and perspectives. Oh, so good. So good. And I think that's a nice little test for us to think through of the people I'm spending time with. We talk a lot on here about the five people who spend the most time with essentially create who you are. Are you giving yourself a chance to grow in any way? Or do those five people agree with you on everything? So you're just regurgitating the same stuff over and over. Or are you seeking out speakers, podcasts, books, articles, coffee meetings with people that don't agree with you? So you can have these kinds of conversations. So again, the action for this first one is to engage in conversations where you intentionally seek out differing opinions and perspectives. Love, love, love that. The second one, regularly challenge your assumptions. Avoid becoming too attached to your initial beliefs and opinions. Regularly question the validity of your assumptions and consider alternative explanations. I know it's hard. You hear that, you're like, no, I like my assumptions. Seek out information that contradicts your current stance. Seek it out. That's the opposite of these biases we talked about, where you're seeking out confirmation. This is contradictory pursuits, not confirmation bias pursuits. And then the action with this one, set aside time to reflect on your core beliefs and identify areas worth potentially rethinking. Well, maybe you just hit pause on this thing right now and just take a moment. Maybe you're out for a walk. Maybe you're driving the car. Can you identify one core belief, one identity about yourself or the world or your politics or your city or your job or group that you spend time or avoid that might be worth rethinking? I mean, if we can't even identify that, what's the likelihood that we're actually going to rethink, right? We've got to open our eyes to the possibilities of, oh, this, I would like to rethink this one. That's a great starting point. Number three, encourage constructive, and yes, I'm pausing on purpose, disagreements. Encourage constructive disagreements. With this one, you're cultivating an environment where dissenting opinions are welcomed and valued. Not just preaching to the choir. Not just, oh yeah, I'm getting together with Joe because Joe and I agree on everything. It's awesome. That's not awesome. That's just getting stuck in the mud. I want to get together with this other person who says, Brad, I don't know. Your thoughts on that, whatever, running training system, workout pursuit, investment ideas, health and wellness as a whole, the way we run our company. You can just keep going down the list. Cultivate an environment where dissenting opinions are welcomed and valued. Number two, encourage colleagues, friends, and family to challenge your ideas in a respectful manner. Susanna and I do this almost nightly. Yes, we have an immense amount in common. We've been married 31 years. I am head over heels with this woman. I respect her more than anyone in the world. But at dinner, we will challenge one another. We read different types of books, listen to different types of podcasts, have different perspectives on things, and I'll bring to her often excitedly, oh yeah, I was reading this thing today. And she'll say, interesting, where do you think that fits into this? Whoa, that's a really good question. So I'm lucky. Like I get this organically, just the way that our marriage has always been, that we welcome that within our marriage of, well, I don't know. What do you think about that, honey? How do you interpret that in context of this? And again, we're benefiting from the fact that she and I are reading and listening to completely different writers and speakers and that kind of thing. So we're able to bring those different perspectives. But I need to look for it beyond that one relationship. But it's a great starting point. So maybe who is that person for you that you can say, I want you to challenge my ideas. I don't want you to just nod your head and say, yep, that's a great idea, Brad. Good thinking. The next step in this one is to engage in debates that focus on finding the best solution, not winning an argument. Wait, what? Now, we don't mean debates like getting up on stage and, you know, doing a show. That's completely different. That's not really a debate. That's a show. That's entertainment. We're talking about when you converse with somebody, whether it's work, play, health and wellness stuff, relationships, family stuff, that you're looking for the best solution, not winning an argument. That comes back to that cycle we talked about earlier, doesn't it? You come in with humility. My answer may not be right. My approach may not be right. My belief may not be right. Let's figure out the best solution, not Brad's got to win. So the action step for this one, again, the headline was encourage constructive disagreements. The action is foster open discussions by, this one's going to hurt, folks, inviting diverse perspectives during personal and professional interactions. Invite. Don't stumble across, although that's not a bad thing either, but actually seek out differing opinions, diverse perspectives. And then really listen with that humility. The fourth of the five is to develop a growth mindset. You hear a lot about that phrase, growth mindset. He brings it in this way. Embrace the idea that intelligence and beliefs are not fixed. They can be developed and refined. What I think today, I can develop that further, refine that further, maybe change that completely tomorrow. Number two, view challenges and failures as opportunities for learning and growth. And number three, this one's hard, avoid seeking affirmation and instead seek out feedback for improvement. One of the things, when you talk to Dr. Grant, one of the things that he'll ask you after a conversation is, what do you think I could rethink based on what you know about me? Wow, what if we were all willing to ask that question? That's developing the growth mindset. And then the action tied to that, the action step, embrace new skills and hobbies. Don't shy away from areas where you might initially struggle. Oh, that is hard for me. I want to come in and have practiced it and prepared for it. In fact, I was actually just talking to one of my son-in-laws about this. He's really good about putting himself out there and trying new things, things that I would not. I would want to be ready and prepared and practice. And he's like, sure, I'll give it a go. I mean, the one that brought the conversation up is he's participating in something called the Highland Games next weekend, and we're going to go see him compete. And that's like this Scottish competition of events that none of us have ever done. Like this guy was a great athlete in high school, but he never threw these giant posts in the air and tried to huck this thing up over a pole. And like, it's unusual stuff. And he didn't prep for 3 months. He got together with his buddy who does this regularly, like 2 days beforehand, and tried it out and then went and competed. And I'm just like, well, Colby, I don't know how you do that, buddy, because I would want so much more prep. But he's willing to pursue that growth mindset. He's embracing new skills and hobbies. He doesn't shy away from areas where he might initially struggle. I do. I need to grow more in that area. So that brings us to the fifth, and that's practice rethinking rituals. Practice. This is not just going to come because we chatted about it for a half hour. It's not even going to come because you pick up his book and read it. We need to develop these practices. So some of the practices he suggests are to incorporate something that encourages you to reconsider your thoughts or decisions on a regular basis. So maybe that's something as simple as a post-it note on your computer that says rethink. Maybe it's a wallpaper on your phone that says reconsider. I don't know what works for you, but something that creates that regular practice. Next one he suggests is to conduct pre-mortems by imagining potential failures or obstacles before making a decision. So we don't just, boom, make it automatically. We consider what might happen from this, what obstacles might occur. And then we engage in active perspective taking, imagining how someone with opposing views might see this situation. The old walk a mile in someone else's shoes, right? But I'm looking for you to put their socks on too. So we're really engaging in this active perspective taking. So the action he ties into this number five is to set aside time each week for reflection, journaling, and or discussing important decisions. We have talked about journaling quite a bit on here. We actually had a whole episode. You can search for it. Just look up Catalyst 360 journaling, and you'll hear a whole episode on a new approach to journaling. And one of the things from that episode that might fit very nicely in here is I think we put too much pressure on ourselves when it comes to journaling. It's often, I need to write a page a day or half page a day or two pages a day. No, you don't. What I shared in that episode is if you'll just sit quietly for 5 to 10 minutes with your journal open and a pen, if nothing comes, that's journaling. You've taken the time to reflect. Usually something will, but that's that pausing, putting the phone aside, stepping away from the computer and the Netflix, and just taking that time to reflect. And he talks about that is so, so valuable when it comes to this idea of rethinking. So that brings us to Adam's rethinking. Again, he and I had a little discourse via email leading up to this episode. And one of the things I asked him was, if you were to write it again, 2 years later, what would you change? What have you learned? What would you add? Here's what he said. I'm still rethinking. One key question is what to rethink. The case for being quick to rethink taken for granted assumptions, intuitions, and opinions is clear. It's less obvious, however, how we should approach deeper knowledge, core beliefs, sacred values. On the one hand, it would be a mistake to recklessly abandon what's core to your sense of self. I'd hate to see you walk away from a good job after one bad day or a good marriage after one bad fight. On the other hand, sometimes our most important rethinking happens when we question the ideas and ideals that we've been most reluctant to give up. Failing to reconsider, and he puts this in quotes, settled science has stalled progress far too many times in history. A second dilemma is when to think again. Before making a decision, it's worth considering two questions. How high are the stakes and how reversible is it? If a choice is inconsequential, it makes sense to be decisive. The early bird gets the worm. If you're about to walk through a revolving door, it's fine to act quickly. You can rethink it later. But if the stakes are high and the door is going to lock behind you, it pays to do your rethinking up front. It really matters, and it won't be so easy to undo. A third puzzle is how much rethinking to do. Yes, overthinking is a problem, but underthinking is a bigger problem. I feel for people who get stuck in analysis paralysis. I worry about people who don't do the analysis in the first place. I'd rather see you embrace the discomfort of doubt than live with the regret of foolish conviction. Love that phrase, foolish conviction. For me, the difference between reflection and rumination is whether you're still learning. Oh, wow. Let me reread that. For me, the difference between reflection and rumination is whether you're still learning. If you're pondering a familiar problem without gaining fresh insights, it's time to seek new information or reach out to your challenge network. Wow. Thank you, Adam. Folks, that's a wrap. Thank you for joining us for this special episode. If you liked it, please pass it along to a friend and let us know. Maybe we'll bring back a similar version on a different book in the future. And if you need anything on the coaching front, from pursuing your MBHWSC approved coach certification to bringing a meaningful approach to your organizational wellness strategy, please reach out anytime. Results@catalystcoaching360.com or visit our website, catalystcoaching360.com. And now it's time to be a catalyst. This is Catalyst Coaching 360's Dr. Brad Cooper. Make it a great rest of your week, and I'll speak with you soon on the next episode of the Catalyst 360 podcast, or maybe over on the YouTube coaching channel.